Our life is actually the practice. And I might ask, how do we realize that our life is actually the practice? In Dokusan, I've brought this up with several teachers. It's hard to take the practice off the cushion. But Norman says our life is actually the practice. So actually, when we get up off the cushion, the practice goes with it. It has to, part of us. The practice and I are one in the same. So where is it? If you move really slowly getting up, can you actually keep track of the practice? So perhaps that's why in the Fukun Zazengi, it says when you arise from sitting, move slowly and quietly, calmly and deliberately. Do not rise suddenly or abruptly. It's not just to be nice to one's knees or hips, as the case may be. Perhaps something much more is there. Kate and Michael gave many talks in February on continuous practice, as well as several senior members of our Sangha. In one of her later talks, Kate commented on the many Zen masters in the stories that Dogen included in the fascicle about the impossible high bar of practice, solitary hermitages, foraging for food, Zazen without laying down for decades, leaving family and loved ones, and so on and so on. You can find that in there. If one compares how you are doing to what our ancestors did, how do you fare? One would say that's not a fair question, and probably rightfully so. But that comparison, as Kate says, the Buddha taught us that all comparison is vanity. Better than worse, than just as good or as just as bad, all is attachment to self. So in that exact practice of just noticing, we are already beginning to let go. The mind of comparison loses its hold upon us, and we identify less with those comparisons. And I might say that the practice of noticing today is probably no harder than it was for our ancestors. Dogen was not a prominent teacher in the Rinzai group where I began my Zen training. I was fascinated to learn of his connection to various Rinzai teachers in his life, as well to his extensive use of koans. My understanding of his disdain of koans was their narrow usage in the pursuit of enlightenment. Dogen thought koan practice was a waste of time for that particular purpose. In my perspective now, is that koan and koan practice is a great tool for training the mind. It seems for me a means to sharpen one's ability to work with the many Zen concepts and ideas in the Zen culture and tradition. There are two fine books that we recently read in the leadership group that review Dogen's life. The first covers his entire life, 1200 to 1253, and it's titled Dogen's Japan's Original Teacher by Stephen Hine. It's a very good book that gives a chronology of his life with detailed notes, and it identifies actually many controversies about events that occurred. These include circumstances around these events, different possible scenarios for these events that could have happened, or even actually if the event actually happened. So there's really a lot we don't know about Dogen, even though people have written volumes about it. There are times in Dogen's life when there's actually no information as to what he was doing or even exactly where he was in Japan and China at times. This all made very interesting reading to understand the backstory of Dogen's life. The second book by James Kodera, titled Dogen's Formative Years in China. This book covers primarily the years of 1223 to 1227 when Dogen was in China. It consists of two parts. The first part is an interpretive narrative of that time period based upon a variety of sources. And the second part is a translation of a diary-like text called Hokyukchi, also translated as the record of private conversation. which Dogen wrote between 1225 and 1227 while he was in China. Then the book details, gives a detailed log of his travels and the teachers he's met. It also describes some of the experiences he encountered, including his awakening with his teacher, Tietong Ruxing. I found it pretty fascinating reading that particular book. There's just a lot of sort of details of his wanderings and some of his confusions and then some of his frustrations with sort of the practice of Zen in Chan, or Chan in this case, in China at that time. As I said, my exposure to Dogen was very limited until I began Soto Zen practice about 6 years ago. And for quite a while, I found Dogen confusing, baffling, inconsistent, and even maddening. And a few years ago, I began reading some of the history and philosophy of Buddhism in order to understand some sense of where he was getting his information and his view of life that might influence his thinking. And these two books I mentioned provided a more direct insight into this person. To say Dogen was a complex person is certainly an understatement, in my opinion. Certainly one aspect of Dogen from these books was his commitment to this practice, in particular Zazen practice. Though we know little of his daily life, the implications of his history is that he was fully dedicated to true Zazen and the spread of this practice. And this is evident after he returned to Japan by the establishment of a monastery, which he moved several times before it ended up in the Echizen Mountains, where Eheiji was established. It was also apparent that his efforts was continuously focused on encouraging people from all walks of life to follow this path. That was really his motivation and his daily effort. Another aspect from these readings I found was a more human perspective of Dogen. For such a complex person, there was a human side. He seemed to learn from people as much as people learned from him. And one example of this occurred shortly after he arrived in China, but was still aboard the ship. A Tenzo came to the ship after traveling many hours to buy mushrooms for his monastery. Dogen suggested he spend the night before returning, but the Tenzo insisted upon leaving as it was his practice to make the next morning's meal. The Tenzo's dedication to this practice became one of Dogen's early encounters with a continuous practice that pervaded the Chan Zen, that pervaded Chan China's Zen practice at the time. And it's an example of what Dogen brought back to Japan upon his return 5 years later, and we've incorporated much of that in our practice, or kitchen practice here. The stories in this fascicle, Gyoji, all have an obvious common theme: continuous practice. There are stories about 35 of our ancestors, beginning with Shakyamuni Buddha, our first patriarch, and ending with Dogen's teacher, Tietong Ruxing. These particular ancestors are primarily from the pre-Kaodong and pre-Linji lineage, as well as the established Kaodong lineage in China at the time. Goji is divided into two parts. The first is the ancestors from India, and the second part is primarily the ancestors from China. What's interesting about this particular fascicle is that it's more similar to the style, to the book Transmission of the Lamp than other works of Dogen. Transmission of the Lamp is a series of stories about our Zen ancestors, where most of the other fascicles in Shobogenjo focus on various aspects of Zazen, Zen concepts and such, and such as what is described in Genjo Koan, Fukin Zazenji, Yuji, and the like. Goji seems to show that over time and over many teachers, that there's a commitment to various forms of continuous practice beyond just meditation. Many of the teachers in the fascicle did not have temples or monasteries, but simple thatched huts or hermitage, if that. I wonder what part three of this fascicle might look like going from Dogen to the present day here at Mountain Rain. Someone willing to write it? I will comment on two stories from within Goji. These are consecutive stories. The first is about Zen Master Dongsheng, and the second is about Zen Master Yuji, who is Dongsheng's disciple. Master Dongsheng is an ancestor that I particularly resonate with, in part because of his teaching of the five ranks and his association with the Rinzai lineage. Dongsheng appeared in the 18th ancestor story of the fascicle Goji and is referred to in the 19th story. In the first story, he says, "Speak what cannot be practiced, practice what cannot be spoken." And in the second story, Yuxing, investigating Dongsheng's words of seven or eight ways, said at the time of speaking, there is no road of practice. At the time of practice, there is no road of speaking. The phrasing of these two statements are typical of Dogen's use of hizmos, where words and sentences constructions of ideas are repeated in reverse order, first one way, then reversed in the second way. One use of it is to create an artistic and memorable phrase. It also seems like a mirror where the first idea can be viewed from two different directions. The first phrase, speak what cannot be practiced, practice what cannot be spoken, is also an attachment to case 77 titled Disclosing is Not a Good as Practice, found in Dogon's 300 koans, which in the commentary it says, practice and speech thoroughly interpenetrate, activity and expression are interdependent. Thus, a full day of speaking is none other than a full day of practice, and a full day of practice is none other than a full day of speaking. One might say that our silent Zazen practice speaks volumes, and perhaps the louder we chant, the deeper we sit. So can we all give great voice to that sutra we're going to chant shortly? In the same sense, Dogen writes a capping phrase, and a capping phrase is a verse or phrase that expresses the insight he had while meditating on the koan. The capping phrase goes like this. Practicing without understanding is like eyes opened in the darkness. Understanding without practice is like eyes closed in the daylight. When practice and understanding have merged, eyes are open in the bright light of day. I like that. Practice without understanding is like eyes opened in the darkness. Understanding without practice is like eyes closed in the daylight. When practice and understanding have merged, eyes are open in the bright light of day. All this is to say, again from Dogen, it means that practice clarifies the way to speech, and there is a way that speech approaches practice. This being so, you practice all day while speaking all day, you practice what cannot be practiced, and you speak what cannot be spoken. The second story goes like this. Yujun, investigating Dongsheng's words seven or eight ways, said at the time of speaking, there is no road to practice. At the time of practice, there is no path to speaking. The footnotes found in the Soto Zen text version of the Shobogenzo indicated that the seven or eight ways refers to seven penetrations and eight masteries, or to thoroughly master these words. The path or road on Dongsheng's three The Path of Road is a play on Dongshan's three roads, or as Honggi Setshi interprets this, three stages of guiding students, namely Path of the Bird, the Dark Road, and the Open Hand, which doesn't make any sense unless you read more in the footnotes and go dive deeper down into other koans, which you find that the three stages of path are to get free from the restrictions, to get an understanding of emptiness, and to reach out and help others. The road to practice and to speaking are intertwined, and according with abilities, functions clearly and simply, one's clear and simple functioning accords with one's abilities. This might also be put another way. Continuous practice is not subject to one's abilities. The story goes on to say that it is not that there is neither practice nor speaking. At the time of speaking, you do not leave the monastery for your lifetime. At the time of practicing, you do not wash your head, and you request Zenhe to shave it. You should not waste time speaking or time of practice. So unwinding this a little bit more, the washing of the head refers to another case of Zenhe called Zenhe Checks Out the Hermit, also in Dogen's Three Dharma Eye, which is 300 koans that he wrote. The master was checking out the hermit whose hair was not cut, meaning very long and raggedy. The hermit was challenged by Zenhen, "If you cannot say a word of Zen, I won't cut your hair." The hermit could not provide a turning word. The hermit then went to the stream and washed his hair, whereafter the master then shaved it. This is to say, practice is beyond speaking, no hair required. Our practice is to hold these statements lightly, and perhaps realizing we cannot practice this practice, nor can we describe what is beyond description. We can do, or try to do, is to be present continuously. So where do we go from here? I would like to conclude with Roshi Joan Halifax, and at the end of her article on the Circle of the Way, it goes like this. In our daily lives, we often struggle to embody these courageous names, and these names she refers to are our ancestors. And then she goes on, we also are swimming against the streams of Western culture and our conditioning. The willingness to live within the truth of all who we are is the precious, rare, and often a difficult thing. These struggles in our sanghas and in ourselves make us more open, more humble, and more disciplined. It is the heartbreaking failure through which we pass as individual practitioners and as a community that are the very means for our compassion, clear mind, and resiliency to develop. In the end, it is the depth and strength of our compassion and our humility that develop us into human beings who have aspirations to awaken from behaviors that produce suffering. Can we do this? Can we look honestly and fearlessly into the face of suffering in ourselves, in our community, and in our world? We can, and we must. How else will we discover what is practice? Everywhere, nothing is hidden. Thank you for your listening, and thank you for your practice.